And here we are.
And here we are.
Thanks for coming out and doing this with
me. Yeah, thanks, man. I'm stoked. I love the new studio.
Thanks, bro.
Especially the boat shelf. That's a really nice touch.
Boat shelf is fucking key. I was telling Sylvia that I wanted to get, like, a bookshelf in here. Mm-hmm. And I went to Goodwill because you're not the first one I was telling you here for the room, but I didn't have chairs until the day that I had the guests come. So okay. I like, went to Goodwill. I was like, I'm just going to get whatever chairs they have there. And, yeah. like, I saw chairs. They were $12. And, like, right next to the chairs was this bookshelf.
Just with the light from heaven shining upon it.
And so, like, I don't know if you've been to Goodwill before. Like
many times.
So when you get, like, big stuff, you, like, grab the tag. You know, you rip the tag off and you take it to the counter and pay for it. And then, okay. like, they can help you bring it out or you can go back and grab it or whatever.
Okay.
So, like, I ripped the tag and then I went to go back to pick it up. And some guy was already looking at it. And the tag said it just got there today. That Damn. Day that I was there.
So it was meant for you.
It was meant to happen.
Was the guy sad when he saw you picking it up?
No, he said he had... No, he was like, that's a great find. Like, I have one like that, too, but it's blue.
A boat shelf?
Yeah, he said this.
There's more than one?
Yeah, he said that he had one, too.
You should look online and see if there's, like, a community of, like, boat shelf owners Dude. And find out they're all podcasters.
Let's check that. Yeah, I just should have asked that guy if he was a podcaster. That's fucking hilarious. I didn't even think about that.
Boat shelf community.
Let's see if I can find a boat shelf here.
Please.
So...
Wow, there's a lot of dang, dude. I saw one over 1,000.
Yeah, those are all really expensive.
Canoe corner, that's a good one.
That's kind of like more like
your
mine.
Basic six shelf row. You got your straight sided double oar. Nautical, that's a good brand. Uma Enterprises.
Is that yeah. I wonder if we could use these as actual boats, like if in time.
I think they were originally designed to be used as like emergency boats. You know what I mean? So like in the event of another cataclysmic flood, you might not have a boat, but you're like, oh man, that bookshelf upstairs is an emergency boat. So you take off the shelves and the books, whatever.
That one's pretty cool. I didn't even mean to look on that.
The Kentwood, yeah. The
Kentwood, but yeah. It really ties the room together.
It really does. I love it.
So this hape stuff.
Hape, yes. This is hape. So hape is a ceremonial wild tobacco infusion. There's a lot of different varietals. This is like a South American. It's usually used prior to plant medicine ceremonies to both enhance the visual effects. Because a lot of the insights that you're going to be getting in the visionary state are like actual visuals. So it helps with that. But it also, I find it to be really centering, really grounding. Like brings me, it's actually gotten me more into Taoism because it really shows you what the present moment is. All the kind of noise and clutter that's on the periphery of your consciousness, past, future, plans, worries, stresses, they kind of like dissolve away in the state. It's really nice. But the other cool thing is that each tribe's blend is custom to it. They're plants that they've been using for hundreds, potentially thousands of years, and they formulate into these little custom blends. So you're kind of getting like a little seed of the jungle in every little bottle.
Interesting. Are the effects generally the same between each bottle?
Not necessarily, no. I find them to be pretty different.
Okay.
Some of them are more, like I think this one is supposed to be a little bit more heating. This is the Rupasuti hape, and it like heats up the body a little bit. Some of them are more acting on like the serotonin chain, which they could even lead to like mild DMT release in the brain, which is pretty cool. And the cool thing about this, so this little thing is called a caripe, just made out of two
like
little
bamboo.
Pieces of, yeah, I think it's like a pygmy bamboo. And the thing is by going through the nose, there are, you know, obviously the tissue is very thin. So you can get pretty much right into the brain. They're very close to it. Whereas, you know, obviously oral consumption of anything psychoactive takes some time to really absorb.
So yeah.
Just a different delivery method that it's kind of new to me, but I've been exploring it, you know. I always like to explore different ways.
Could you snort mushrooms, you think, and get the same effects?
I don't know if you could. It really depends on the size of the molecule.
And how it breaks down.
Exactly. So, gotcha. Like, certain compounds have, pretty much all compounds have really specific conditions that they need to be absorbed into the synapses of the body. So, like, a common one that most people talk about now is ayahuasca. Like, if you were to eat one of the two plants that ayahuasca is made of, you would get no effects, right? The DMT itself is not absorbable in any quantity if you just eat it. because it's broken down by a specific enzyme, you know. So if you have the other plant, the other root, which I think it's called, they call it the vine of death, then it deactivates that enzyme so you can absorb all the DMT that way. So, but the crazy thing about that is that there's thousands and thousands of species of plants in the jungle. So the fact that these shamans were able to put these formulations together and find out what works that way is pretty impressive.
That is pretty wild.
Yeah.
That is pretty fucking wild.
And there's still, I'm sure there's still plenty of stuff to be discovered, you know, like I'm sure there's some mollusk or like sea urchin at the bottom of the ocean that has some weird compound that acts on our, who knows.
There's a frog.
Yeah. Yeah, the Sonoran Desert Toad has, yeah, 5-MeO-DMT. Yeah, that's one I have not yet tried, but I'm interested
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I don't know how you would even...
Yeah, I mean...
Gotta what, probably go really far down the rabbit hole to find someone
I mean,
breeding those things.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've met some people in some of the circles I've been in who, like, know a guy, you know what I mean? But I just think it's fascinating that nature even gives us these compounds. Like, what are... It doesn't seem at all random that there are certain frogs and certain plants and mushrooms and, you know, algaes and stuff that have all these different medicinal effects on the body. It's pretty fascinating.
I guess I haven't always believed it, but more recently in my life, I think everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And I think that reason isn't necessarily, like, because of God's choosing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's more of a, like, a mathematical equation behind it that's far more complex, you know, like molecules and different types of atoms reacting with each other.
Sure.
Are gonna just keep reacting, you know,
right?
And I feel like that's just happening on a larger scale that we can't see necessarily.
So
or more minute, fine scale than we can see.
Who is it that wrote these mathematical equations, and what is the purpose of them?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that.
Because there does seem like I assume you're insinuating there's like a there's an intention behind it. Like somebody designed this environment and put little conscious beings into it.
No, I don't think that.
Really?
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where all things started.
Right.
But I think whatever equation has put all these together, like when you put hydrogen and oxygen together,
mm-hmm.
you get H2O.
Sure.
And that kind of thing, like reacting on all over the place constantly, like our conversation right now, are those reactions happening?
Right.
And I think that kind of is like predetermined in some ways.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. So you're saying that like maybe there was some initial causative act that kind of set everything in motion, and everything is just an effect of the previous cause, and it repeats and repeats and repeats.
Right.
So would under that paradigm, what looks like our conscious free will is just an illusion then? It feels like we're making yeah. decisions, but could we have made any other decision?
That's exactly my thought.
Right.
Like, what that had to have been my reaction to you telling me that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Potentially, yeah. Because every single experience you've ever had in your entire life, and maybe even past lives before this one that your soul was in, led you to responding that exact way to what I said.
Yes. Exactly.
Or not. You could change any moment, and there are an infinite amount of possibilities that would set you off on a different path. For each different answer you could say.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, I really don't know, but that was definitely a thought that I've had.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking more about that like recently.
Yeah, I feel that's a big one. People have kind of been speculating about the idea of human free will for thousands of years, it seems. Like most of the philosophy studied today, at least taught in schools, is like based off of the Greek philosophers. And that was a huge thing to them, too. We've made almost no progress in figuring out what this is, this plane of existence, and also if we even have causative agency, if we can even affect change. Like, are there multiple timelines, or are we just living out a completely predetermined narrative, and somehow we're in this little vessel of illusory free will? So it feels like we're making all these decisions, and people spend... Think about how much time and energy people put into making decisions. So then if you look at it from the perspective that we don't even have free will, that's so much wasted energy. Shouldn't we just surrender and just let the flow happen the only possible way it can? if it is indeed that we don't have free will.
Yeah.
Which we might. I think we might. I think we probably do.
Yeah. I think it's probably healthier to think that way.
Yeah. The way that I've been looking at it recently, and this is completely subject to change and has changed, and I'm sure I'll modify
it. Same here. You know, I haven't thought that my whole life. It's been more of a recent thought.
Exactly. It's always in flux. I think that's totally healthy. But what I've been looking at it is like, so you start with the concept of the all, which you could call God, which I've been, the definition I've been liking lately is that for which there is no other. So there's only one thing. So you as an individual can't really know God or connect to God without being it, because by doing that, you create that separation. And if God consciousness is that for which there is no other, then God communicating with you creates a duality which can't exist. So the God consciousness, the God point of view is almost not there at that point. But if you would imagine being God and having nothing else, it would be extremely boring. It would be extremely lonely. And the only way to really know who you are is the way I've been looking at it lately, is that you would fragment yourself into a bunch of tiny, temporary, fractal versions of you that are all slightly different. And those pieces of you would interact with each other and experience connection and unity. And the coming back together is how God comes to know itself. So we are all really little fractal pieces of the same thing. That's why a lot of religions say we're made in like the image of God, because we essentially are God. If God is all there is, then how could he or she or it create anything besides itself? You know what I'm saying? So I feel like we're all little pieces of that, and temporarily seeing what it's like to be cut off from our own source, but we really are that source. There's really not a separation. So that's been kind of a fun perspective, I think.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think our feeling of being cut off like that is because we have to live out like the human experience?
Yeah, I think it's...
And it's kind of a
think about this. I mean, like, think of the joy of connecting to something or solving a problem or accomplishing a goal. None of those things can happen without the potential for the opposite. If you were always in a perpetual state of having accomplished all of your desires, you wouldn't get to experience the joy of the process for any of these things. And this is kind of the condition that God finds himself in, because outside of time, everything is full and complete, and there's no growth. There's no acquisition of knowledge or experience. There's no conversation. For all of those things to exist, there has to be at least a temporary darkness to be filled in by light. I think that's what love is. Could there really be love if there was only one thing in the universe? What thing would express love to anything else? You know? So for that to really exist, it has to be fragmented, at least from an illusory perspective. And I think that might be like the Maya, the veil that a lot of these ancient religions talk about. I think it's necessary. And there might be different levels to it. Right now we feel pretty separated, but perhaps there are hierarchies when you get outside of time into like the angelic realm. You might have a little bit more of an understanding of what it's like to be at that universal consciousness, because you're only a few steps away. Whereas here I feel like we're pretty far. But again, we really have no idea.
Yeah.
In this state.
It is.
Which is really fun.
It is, yeah. I never thought about it that way. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie Soul? It's like a Disney movie.
I know what you're talking about. I've been wanting to see that a lot lately. It seemed really interesting just from the preview that I saw.
It is very interesting. It's very touching, and it touches on a lot of... I think it's a kids' movie. You know, it's a Disney, Pixar thing. Right. But, I mean, it touches on some really deep stuff that I think is really great for kids.
Yeah.
And it's about a musician.
Right.
A jazz musician, so you really can't, like, beat
him. Yeah. And he has, like, a near-death experience, right? Or he goes into a coma or something.
Spoiler alert for anyone that's listening.
Including me, because I haven't seen it.
Do you want me to tell you or just please. Yeah. Okay. He dies.
Okay.
He dies, like, right at the beginning.
Actually dies.
Yeah.
Okay.
He, like, gets the gig, and as he's, like, leaving, he's, like, walking down the street, and he falls down, like, a sewer hole and... like a manhole, and dies.
Wow.
And then he's on like this like conveyor belt with like all these souls going into like the great beyond, and it's just like this big black thing And Trenton Reznor's music is playing in the background.
Whoa.
And he's like,
what does he see?
It's like all the souls like accepting going into the great beyond.
Really?
But he's not accepting it.
Okay.
He doesn't want to. What happens? He doesn't want to go. And so he ends up going into like the place of creation.
Ooh.
And it's like it's hard to explain what that place is like.
Sure.
You'll just have to see it. I mean, yeah. And then, you know, there's like a kids movie still too, so like
yeah,
the concepts are like lighthearted right. in some places, but that it's still pretty deep. I mean, you see like someone die kind right. of, you know, and it's not graphic, but like
mm-hmm.
it's still pretty heavy, you know, if you have sure. any kind of understanding of like death and
right.
what this guy just achieved. What he was like a school teacher and he hated being a teacher.
Wow.
And he just wanted
so
to
so he like, made it. He finally made it.
He wanted to play saxophone or whatever it was with this jazz player
okay.
that he would go see all the time, like a really well-known jazz player.
Right.
And then he died wow. like right when he got the gig. He didn't even get to play the show.
Wow. That's fascinating. Yeah, I suppose even just that story alone kind of makes you wonder. It's, you know, if we there are some who believe that we chose to incarnate here. And again, that implies a bunch of free will. But supposing we did decide to come here, are there specific things that we wanted to experience, to learn? Were there other souls who were like, hey, let's go down into Earth and like meet up down there and start a band or start a podcast or learn about what it's like to, I don't know, build a new community or something? There's so many different options. You know, it really makes you wonder. But we don't come in with any conscious memory of that. There's not like a little notebook of like, dear self, when I reach this age, I want to do these specific things,
right.
and that's why I'm here. It's just completely ambiguous. You know, we literally just slowly start waking up here over the years, and no one really knows what we're supposed to do. So we just kind of look around and see what everybody else is doing, and a lot of people do that, but then it gets to a point where we're like, wait a minute, this isn't necessarily bringing me joy and satisfaction in life. So it's like, then what, you know? It's a pretty fascinating condition being a human in this time.
It is.
Especially this time. This is a good time.
It is pretty interesting. And this is also a very interesting time. You know, just in our lifetime, like, we've gotten, like, the internet.
Right.
You know, and cell phones and just, like, ways to communicate yes. with other people around the entire world. That
right. Instantly.
Instantly.
Even like, I'm amazed that at any moment I could just type in a message and send it to, like, my mom and she'll or anyone. A friend, anyone, like, and they'll immediately receive these shapes on their screen, and their brain can take those shapes and translate them into meaning and essentially know my thoughts, because I sent them the thought encoded as those shapes across thousands of miles, and then they were untranslated into meaning, and then they could send their meaningful response back in the form of these shapes, and we just communicate that way. And we seem to do a decent job.
Yeah.
But I've been wondering lately, this is an interesting
thing
that's been on my mind, is all of the technological progress that humans have been making lately, or always, what if those are all attempts that we may not fully be conscious of, but they're attempts to replicate technologies that we are already innately capable of? Because there are a lot of examples of people with what we would call ESP or telepathy or even telekinesis, being able to manipulate objects through space. Like, there are legends that and texts that some of these ancient monuments that we can't figure out how they were actually made by dwarf people who whistled the stones through the air. Like, they were able to manipulate massive, massive objects with sound. And that sounds ridiculous from a certain point of view, but then you look at our technology and you realize, like, things like smartphones and computers are using silica-based crystals. So we're using crystals in our technology already. So people are like, oh, this hippy-dippy, silly crystal incense nonsense. It's like, okay, well, that's what your phone uses, you know, so it's rather hypocritical. But it's pretty interesting that our technology is built off of similar methodologies that some of this ancient stuff is. And it's like, how much further ahead of us were they, and how much more knowledgeable were they about the potential of what humans can do without electronics?
Yeah.
You know, maybe we've forgotten and we're trying to replicate it. And at some point along the way, we'll realize, oh, we can do all this stuff without it, you know?
I was in Rome, and that place is old.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you got to think the Colosseum, like, how fucking old is that place?
Very.
And, like, we have houses that we build here that don't even withstand shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. This thing has been around for just fucking taking it by the weather, right, by people, by everything, you know?
Think of what has been seen in that place.
Oh, it's insane. The amount of violence and fucking death.
Their sports were death. They captured exotic-looking people from the corners of the world and somehow got them to fight each other to the death in a giant arena.
People loved it.
Yeah. They even, I think they only did this maybe once, at least it's recorded, but at one point they flooded the Colosseum, you know, because people were always wanted to see, like, the next craziest shit. So they flooded the entire Colosseum, and they had a naval battle. So they had, like, a bunch of gladiators on ships, and they, like, fighting each other, but they're like, no, that's not enough. So they brought in a bunch of crocodiles. So swimming in these waters were big, pissed off, hungry crocodiles. So if you get, like, hit by an arrow and you lose your balance and you fall in the water, there's a very big risk that you get eaten by these exotic beasts that no one had ever seen before. It's, like, it's crazier than any live experience that we would ever see today. You
know? Yeah, that is really fucking crazy to think. They were having a good time.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
not everyone was having a good time.
Right. Well, it's kind of amazing to me that you could get people to fight each other to the death with these brutal, spiked, crazy, rusty weapons just for no pay. Like, they were just enslaved and told to do this.
You know? They definitely were enslaved, but they could work their way to freedom.
Hmm.
And they could also work to be, like, a trainer to them.
Of
other gladiators.
See, that's hilarious, because you would think that having gone through that, you would have some type of motivation to, like, end that system. But I guess you become such a part of it. And maybe they take them as children, too. Who knows? You know, they're taking
slaves. Yeah, they definitely
bred
gladiators over there, too.
Yeah, because that's the best way to make an expert killer is start them early, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So I've heard.
So one interesting, I've told you, I've been reading that book, Dune.
Yes.
And people on this podcast probably going to hear me talk about it a bunch.
Please do.
One of, like, the first chapter, or I think it is the first chapter, they say that when man, like, relies on machine. Hold on, I gotta look it up, because it's a pretty interesting quote. Dune machine quote. And I think this is gonna fall right into what you were just saying. Once men turned their thinking over to machines in the hope that this would set them free, but that only permitted other men with machines to enslave them.
Wow. And that's how the book begins?
That's not how it begins. It's in the first chapter. Okay. It's brought up. It's like a part of their history.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you think about the best way to enslave, if we really are fractal pieces of the divine, right? So we're like tiny, tiny gods, lowercase g, you know? The only way you could really stop us was by giving us really bad information and making us think that we are not powerful, and that we don't have all of these innate abilities, and that the only way to live a decently joyful life is by utilizing all of these tools and technologies that we're given, which is pretty obviously untrue. If you look at most reports of happiness in like an industrialized society like the United States versus people living in harmony with nature in the jungle, they're way happier. They have almost no disease, no sickness. There's no cancer, no heart disease, no obesity. People don't need braces. And people only work like 3 hours a day. That's like the average amount of time necessary to maintain a wild lifestyle. It might be like, and the funny thing is those 3 hours are things that we do for leisure, like things that we do for fun, like fishing and camping and crafts. Like, these are things that we'll actually pay to go do. That's how they survive. So the hardest part of their day is doing what we consider fun, like weekend adventures, you know? So they're just on a way higher level of life satisfaction, and yeah. they're not using any of these technologies, you know? Not that there isn't some cool benefits to them, like the type of music that I like to make requires electronic amplification.
Yeah.
Yours as well.
Yeah, to do this podcast requires
yes,
that.
Yes, yes.
Communicate with people right. in the way that we do.
Right, and I think that's really cool that we can do that, because yeah. that's an experience that they can't necessarily have living in the jungle. But again, there's always a flip side. I think people are able to communicate over long distances in some ways. There are tales of Aborigines in, I think it's either Australia or New Zealand, and I feel like we might have talked about this before, but the shamans will be like, okay, we need to meet up, or the chiefs, rather, or the tribes will be like, we need to meet up at a certain location, a meeting location. And these tribes might be like hundreds of miles apart. So they're like, okay, in like 10 days, we need to meet up here. And they'll go into a lucid dream state quite intentionally and contact each other there and be like, hey, here's the meeting date. Here's the place. You know, we'll see you in 10 days. And everybody shows up. Like, everybody was able to communicate this without walkie-talkies, phones, computers. So they're doing the same type of communication or similar without any of the electronic gadgetry.
Without the white man.
Yeah, without the white man.
Without the white man influence.
Yeah.
I was just watching this special that John Leguizamo's put together.
Okay.
It was a Latin history for fucking morons.
Nice.
And and he was talking about how all these Latin tribes and groups, like millions and millions of people. I mean, I knew that there was that happening. I just didn't know the quite extent mm-hmm. when Columbus came over.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wiped out all these tribes and all these, yeah. like, people, and brought all these, like, diseases, like syphilis and right. shit like that. And, you know, they melted all of their gold and stole all of their artwork.
Right.
And made it, and he was, like, saying, you know, when you think of, like, these Mexican cultures, they're, like, folk art, but when you have European art, it's fine art.
Yeah. That's not right.
And then all the modern art is, like, modern takes on, like, the folk art.
Right.
You know?
Which everyone kind of knows is the best, but nobody acknowledges.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy to
yeah,
think?
Yeah. That's really, really interesting. I think there's a lot of fascinating stuff that was probably lost in all over the world, really, because conquest is kind of for some reason that's what Europeans do, is they conquer places and burn everything down. But they're always conquering the coolest places, you know. Like, I think something like 90% of the population of the Americas was wiped out, like, very shortly after the Europeans came. And those guys knew some stuff, man. They were like
90% of them.
Yeah, their astronomy and mathematics was on a whole nother level. I was actually just reading a book last night about the Mayan calendar and their mathematics system, and they have a whole different way of organizing time. And they understood. I guess it's kind of like astrology, but their own version of it. That each day has a specific energy to it, and you might be more likely to succeed in your endeavors by organizing your actions with those energies. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah. let's say there might be a better day to go hunting. You know what I mean? Or a better day to meditate and get in contact with higher consciousness of some kind, you know? Each day is not arbitrary. It has a specific energy to it. And like you were saying earlier about the equations and stuff, is these things are trackable. You know, they seem to follow organized algorithmic patterns that these people were able to figure out. And in our society today, most people don't know that. And the people who do are probably extremely wealthy and keeping it to themselves, because they're able to look at our economy and know exactly what's going to happen next.
Right.
But we're over here, like, scrambling, yeah. trying to, like, figure things out. You know?
Right, yeah.
So, there's a lot of ancient wisdom that I think it's starting to come out a little bit, especially this...
I will say that today I think we picked specifically.
Yes.
Today is a super moon.
Today is a super, super moon. Yeah.
A super, super moon?
It's, I mean, it feels like it. I guess
it does, kind of, yeah.
Technically, like, a super moon and a full moon don't have to technically be on the same day. I think the supermoon just represents the distance to the Earth.
But today is a full moon. But
today is also a full moon, which that's the two supers.
Gotcha. Okay. What makes it a supermoon?
That just means it's closer to the Earth than any other point.
You said that.
Yeah, okay. Closer to the Earth than it usually is. So it could still be only like a half moon phase, but a super moon. So the part
massive.
That you can see would still look large. But when it's full, obviously, you're going to get even more of that. So whatever effect the moon is having on the Earth, which could be, you know, theorized in a lot of different ways, if there's any effect, it's arguably the strongest today, right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be doing something.
I think it's undeniable. So, like, for example, a few years ago, I was a high school teacher for a little while, and all of the...
What?
Yeah, it was kind of a random chapter in my life. I taught interrelated high school mathematics for, like, a year and a half in Georgia. So, anyway, it was fun. It was cool. It was, you know, I'm not still doing it.
I know, like, but nothing about you.
That, well, now you know. Now you know another fun fact. I'll drop them as we go.
Yeah.
But anyway, while I was doing that, I remember other teachers saying, and they weren't saying this in, like, a funny or a what if way. It was, like, pretty much a known fact, like the career teachers who'd been doing this for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. It was just known that on a full moon, the kids were all way more, like, out of control, way more crazy. And so why is that? I don't know. None of them really seem to have a theory for that. But they were all like pretty, that was just the way it was, you know? And then I've been learning recently, I've been studying parasites a little bit. And there's an idea that a lot of people are like in our society are walking around with like worms and parasites inside their body. It's funny that you mentioned Dune actually, because I was just reading an article the other day about how Dune is like this big allegory for these parasites that are living inside of us, and that's what the worms are. And it got really crazy. It really related it to like adrenochrome and like children's suffering feeding these parasites and people getting addicted to it, and then all the celebrities like secretly signaling that they need more of this stuff. It got really wacky. But anyway, the point is, on full moons, these parasites, that's their breeding cycle. That's like the peak of their breeding time. So these parasites like to hide from the human immune system inside the cells. But there's something special about the full moon. This is when they come out of their safety. They come out of the cells so that they can breed. So they'll do that for a day, which maybe that's what makes everybody so crazy, is that, you know, when you have breeding parasites inside your body, you have all sorts of weird inflammatory reactions happening. It's influencing your nervous system in wacky ways. And then after that, they go back into your cells.
Kind of like the 17-year cicadas.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a moon cycle instead. So, yeah, there's something really special about the moon. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's doing something. Theoretically, I mean, if gravity is what they say it is, the closer the moon is to the Earth, the less of a pull, or I should say some of the Earth's gravitational pull on everything would be lessened a little bit because you have an antagonistic force on it, right?
That would be my thought on it.
Yeah. Dave actually has told me that some of his highest lifts, like his best lifts, were on full moons. Because theoretically, you know, you're lifting a 200-pound weight. That weight is going to feel lighter. It's actually going to be lighter. Its mass won't change, but its perceived weight would change in relation to you if the moon were kind of taking some of that burden off of you. So it's pretty interesting.
That is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. We should ask him later.
Yeah.
Probably see him later.
Yeah, see how his workout was today.
Because I don't know if he knows it was a full moon. I don't know if he knows it's a full moon and a super moon.
Yeah, he might not, actually. I would be interested to find out. Yeah, it would be cool to have access to the data of, you know, what type of records are set on these days, what kind of events happen on these days, you know, what happens with, say, ER visitations and financial occurrences, you know, and just kind of see if we can find something.
See a pattern or an overview
exactly.
All this stuff is try to put something together.
Yeah. And even the funny thing is even if we had a really cool data set to see that things were happening, because it seems like they are, I can always feel something on a full moon. Today's been a wacky day in itself. But why? Why is that happening? What is the moon? What kind of influence is it having upon us? Because we're told that it's just reflected solar energy. It's basically just a big white mirror blasting some sun at us when the sun is at a point that we can't even see it, which might be true. It's possible. But if there were an alternate truth, how would we know? I haven't been to the moon myself.
Yeah, me neither. I guess we really don't know.
Yeah.
I did really enjoy watching last year the dragon spaceship make it to the ISS, the International Space Station.
Ooh, okay.
And tell that me more. So it was like in conjunction with NASA and SpaceX, which is Tesla guy.
Yeah.
Elon Musk. It's Elon Musk's rocket project.
So okay. These are those self-landing rockets?
Yeah, the self-landing rockets.
Yeah.
So he makes the rockets. NASA's like, making it go to the moon, you know, getting it up there. And, or not the moon. They weren't going to the moon. Sorry. They were going to the International Space Station.
Okay.
And just like the fucking brains behind making that happen is beyond me. I mean, these guys are like, first launching themselves into fucking atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then they're orbiting the Earth and like gaining speed to up to like 20,000 or maybe it's 200,000 miles per hour.
Okay.
That's how fast the International Space Station is going.
All the time.
All the time. It goes around the Earth like 8 times in our day.
Really?
So they
That's extremely fast.
So they
That's 8 times more than the moon does.
So they see like daytime and nighttime like multiple times a day.
Wow. Oh, the people on the space station.
On the space station.
That must be a wacky way to live, because we are very much wired for a normal Earth day.
Yeah, that's why they don't go up there for very long.
Yeah. Very quickly, they deteriorate. Their bone mass and muscle mass decreases.
Because, yeah, they're not using anything.
Right, exactly. And the body atrophies very quickly when there's no gravity. So that's an issue. And I think they have ways of simulating gravity. But what they've actually found from my research is even more important, or at least equally important, is the Earth's electromagnetic field. You know, we're all right now on the Earth in approximately, I think it's between like 8 and 10 hertz. So 8 to 10 electromagnetic waves per second is this field that the Earth is producing. And life flourishes in this field. And when you leave that field, your cells, which require that those frequencies to maintain optimal voltage, it doesn't go well for your cells, basically. So you start deteriorating very quickly, and you're more susceptible to oxidation and pathogens and all sorts of stuff. But they do have ways of simulating these things. There are devices, these PEMF devices, pulsed electromagnetic field. And they use like conductive copper coils, and they run a current through them, and they emit similar frequencies to the Earth. And they use those not just in space, but they also use them like as healing devices here. Since people are wearing rubber shoes and they're living in skyscrapers, and we're being bombarded in all these non-native EMFs from like cell phone towers and Wi-Fi, all that stuff.
Right.
It can really mess up with they're called ion channels in the cells, basically, is how your cells like move electricity around. So they're using these devices to heal people, bring them back more into harmony with Earth's electromagnetic frequencies. It's pretty wild. It's cool that we've been able to figure that out, at least.
That is pretty cool. All I know that they do up there is drink their own piss. They recycle their pee.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do they do that?
So they don't use up water.
Do they have a filtration system, or...
Yeah, they have a super heavy filtration system, yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, there are some people who drink their own urine intentionally, like, on Earth.
Yeah.
For the electrolyte benefits and reabsorbing the minerals and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know. They have a filtration system that they use.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure if they were, like, trying to, yeah, where you're going with that.
No, they recycle their pee by filtering it out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the people who do this are like, I know there's one, I forget his name, Lyoto Machida, maybe? He's like a UFC fighter. He's like, or maybe it's BJ Penn. I don't know. Someone is like known for frequently drinking their own pee every morning, like especially during fight camp when they're preparing for a fight, because it really, one of the most concentrated sources of electrolytes is a person's own urine. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. I've tried it. It's not, it's, it, I didn't really get much out of it. I got a little bit of like an energy, maybe a little bit of an energy burst, but that might have just been the weirdness that I was experiencing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I could see that.
So it was a short experiment, but. We should try it sometime.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know about that. Well, maybe one day.
Yeah.
I got to work up to that.
Right.
I got to work up to that.
Right. That's astronaut status.
Yeah.
You'll get there.
So, how have things been going with the band?
Really good, man. Really, really good. We were recently gifted this beautiful organite piece, which is it's a pyramid. This resin pyramid with a bunch of cool stones in it. And it's the idea is that the resin kind of puts a lasting pressure on the stones. Yeah, kind of like that first one.
Awesome.
And they emit these frequencies. But it was really cool. It was made for us custom by my Reiki teacher's friend, I think. And she makes these things. But she programmed into it like the intention of creativity into the piece. And because she knew it was going to be like for our practice space. So it's really, really beautiful. It's purple. It's got all these crazy cool copper spirals and different amethysts and stuff in it. And we put it in our space. And I've personally noticed that whenever we're like mindful of it and bring it to the middle of the room before practice, that our jams are just beautiful. Like it feels like everything just flows so, so well, because it's usually how we would start our practices is just kind of like an inspired jam. Everyone just kind of starts playing, and that's when the coolest things come through. That's how a lot of our songs start or are written.
Same,
you know.
Same, we just like just pick it up. You know, it's like right when you're freshest. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
You know, like you maybe have warmed up like just a hair, but not even. You know, sometimes
you're not even fully warmed up.
Not even fully warmed up. But, you know, even that first like you're starting to jam. Even that first little bit may be rough, but then like you hit this point where you like you break through and you're like, hell yeah! You know, you're all feeling it. And then afterwards, and you're like. And we're about to play a set right now?
Right, which is the best news ever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, those moments are indescribable for sure, because when you really tap into that creativity current, you kind of stop being a person. Like, you stop being who you were before practice started. You're not really conscious of what am I going to play next or what's going on in my life. You kind of surrender that. It's almost like the ego part of you gets turned way, way down and opens up almost like a portal so that the muses are coming down and kind of breathing the creativity of these melodies into the band, and everyone's kind of holding down their own position and no one's really orchestrating it, no one's really leading it. It's so cool to see, and different time signatures will come out and different melodies and polyrhythms and all the, and even what I think is weirdest is you'll be improvising something and then two people in the band or everybody in the band will start like syncing up on a specific rhythm. It's like, who wrote that rhythm? Where is that coming from? And how are multiple people picking up on it if we're just jamming, you know?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Where's that coming from?
I think that movie Soul, bringing it back to that.
Yeah.
The guy being a musician, he sees like the afterlife or like this other place in the afterlife where when people enter that state, that's where they go. And they like meet each other.
The source of creation. That's what you were saying.
And it's not, they're not necessarily in that part of it, but I mean, it could be, it's in the same like area. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's all the same thing that's happening in that other side that we can't, that's not necessarily tangible to us, but it's there, you know, like we go there. That's where I feel like we go. And when we hit that state, when we're all, and we're all just like talking to each other on another realm.
Right.
But talking it's only our language, you know, it's like our conversation between each other.
Sure.
You know, and if other people hear it like coming by, they may like understand the language, you know, but like we're the one, they're not communicating with us, they're just listening.
Yeah, they're listening to a conversation.
Yeah.
From the outside. Yeah, that's really, really fascinating. I've always been enchanted by that. I think that's a type of connection between humans that everyone should explore, you know? That's one of the most intimate experiences I feel you can have is jamming with someone. It sounds so simple, But when you really have experienced one of those moments, one of those real mind-melding moments where you all become one thing that's just channeling this beautiful, divine sound.
Right.
It's so cool.
It is
that's
very cool.
Like that's what I live for.
That's why we do it.
Yeah.
That's why we're musicians.
Yeah, man.
You know? It's why we're real musicians.
Right.
That's just right. That's what we live for.
Right.
You know? Like, it just fucking makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
It really does. I feel like if you're meant to do this, you just know. Like, when I look back at most of my life, honestly, at least the last probably 20 years, so much of my life has been guided by music. Whether it's I meet someone because we somehow randomly find that we have a favorite band in common, or I was like in band, like in high school, middle school, that type of thing, and met someone through there. Like so many of my friendships and key events in my life have been kind of guided by my interest in music. You know, even my explorations in consciousness and spirituality were initially catalyzed by some of the interlude tracks of. Are you familiar with the band Mudvayne?
Yeah, but I don't know if I could.
Yeah, that's okay. So they have one of their earlier albums is called LD50, and they have a lot of interludes that had these. I would hear this strange voice. You know how people will do like a voiceover under some cool ambient music, and I'd heard this voice. And it was a strange, like, nerdy guy, and he's, like, talking about neurotransmitters and the effect on consciousness. And I'm like, what is this? It just, like, really resonated with me, even though I didn't fully know who it was. So I started looking into it, found out it was this guy named Terrence McKenna, who at the time I'd never heard of, and started exploring what he had to say. And he, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's, like, one of the most famous psychonauts ever. Like, he really dove deep into the world of specifically DMT and psilocybin and really explored those realms.
Was he a professor at a school?
I believe he was an ethnobotanist, so he studied the relationship between plants and humans over time. And so, very, very knowledgeable.
Did he get arrested?
I don't think he got arrested.
I'm thinking of someone else then.
A lot of those guys disappear. Because they go deep, and the thing is with these perspectives is the more of them you explore, the less appealing the traditional American dream pathway becomes. The, you know, go to college, get a job, pay taxes, have a family, have a couple kids, go to church on Sundays, drive a minivan, watch the game. Like that's great until you start exploring these non-physical, non-temporal, strange, amorphous worlds of weird conscious machine elf entities and stuff like this. Your mind really starts to go in new directions at that point. And traditional narratives, especially ones that lock you into specific roles and pathways, are just, they don't seem as appealing anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, it was music that led me to this guy, and that this guy's lectures and stuff are really what kind of catalyzed my interest in psychedelic experience and metaphysics, that type of thing.
Interesting. Another thing I didn't know about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, music has pretty much been my guiding force, and also not even, it's been up and down, you know? Mm-hmm. Music has just been my life, and life isn't always a good thing.
Yeah.
And not that I have any, like, animosity towards music.
Right.
Like, obviously, I wouldn't be here doing it if I did.
Yeah.
But there's been some bittersweet moments.
Of course.
You know, I've had one really good friend pass away that was a musician that I was in a band with.
Wow.
And, you know, that's like, I didn't play music for a while after that.
Sure, man.
I didn't, like, you know, I didn't want to. But at the same time, it's also put me in this situation with, like, this great community of people that I now know.
Yeah.
That at that time I didn't have.
Exactly.
You know? And if I didn't have music, I wouldn't have had either of those things. You know,
right.
I wouldn't have had that guy. I wouldn't have had you. I wouldn't have any of this.
Yeah.
Know? I don't even
Isn't
know.
Isn't that interesting? It's almost like music itself is an intelligence. It's like a, maybe it's God in a kind of like a sneaky, unseen form, kind of binding us all together, healing us. I mean, music really is just organized sound.
Maybe it's something that adheres some of the fractions together.
Exactly. I think it does. I mean, look at what music does. Look at what it does now. It's the same thing that it's been doing for thousands of years. If you think about the archetype of the tribal community gathered around a large fire dancing to, elk skin drums and while the shamans are chanting and stuff. There's something really magical and profound about the effects of music on the human consciousness. I mean, it changes our brainwave states. It opens us up to creativity and higher levels of empathy and community bonding. If you look at like the energy of a concert, or whether it's an EDM show or a rock concert, there's a very, very palpable level of community, and I noticed that right away when I remember my first show. It was like what was it called? Taste of Chaos, I think. It was some big tour at the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago. I think it was in high school or shortly after. And I remember I was walking in. It was just like so overwhelmingly loud. Some metal band I'd never heard of. I could hear playing like I wasn't even in there yet. And everything was booming. There was a guy coming out on a stretcher. I was like, oh my gosh, what is this going to be? But then once I was in there, I realized like how there's everyone, although nobody knew each other, it kind of felt like one giant family. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like on a Saturday night or something, or who knows, it could be a Tuesday night. It doesn't matter. If your band's in town, like you go to the show, you make it work, and people drive from hours away, and they might have put multiple days of pay into that ticket and travel to get there that night. And everyone is just sharing that beautiful moment. And then the people on stage are just, they're like stewards of a greater sound ceremony is kind of how I see it. They're the ones with the privilege, but also the honor and responsibility of doing the very best they can to be a channel for this divine sound that's coming through and bonding everybody together. And when you leave, you've changed somehow inside. Something has happened. It wasn't just like, oh, this was a cool experience for a couple hours. And maybe it was just that. But a lot of the times, especially if it's something you really resonate with, you're a better version of yourself after that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like the band or the music is picking up everyone in like a lump sum, giving everyone little back massages,
yeah,
and then sending them back down back into the real
world. Yeah, exactly. Like sending them back on their way, and life is somehow just a little bit better.
It's like,
after
I got a little back massage.
Right.
I'm gonna go back out there and just fucking crush it.
And it's cool how the different genres of music kind of have different effects too. Like it's a very different energy, a very different type of catharsis going to like a heavy metal show or a punk rock show versus like a funk show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I feel after like a really good, just like sticky, icky funk show, like I go back out into the world and I'm just like, everything's a little goofier. Everything's a little more magic. I'm a lot more in touch with my inner child. You know what I mean? Whereas like after a metal show, I'm like, I just feel clean. You know what I mean? Like I feel like I shook off any part of me, any part of my biofield that didn't need to be there anymore,
It's like a grounding almost.
Yeah, exactly. And but for a lot of people, like, I'm not necessarily that into moshing, but some people go hard at metal shows, obviously.
Yeah, I'm too small for that.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, it seems like it's so easy to just get smashed. You know what I mean? Even if you're a bigger dude, there's just so many people moving at incredible velocities. I've been accidentally kicked in the head so many times, in a mosh pit, you know what I mean, just being near one,
right?
That actually being inside, it's crazy. It's happened. I've gone in a few times, but yeah, usually I'm just trying to watch the band,
Yeah.
It's like I put so much into trying to get there.
You guys are fighting each other in front of
me. Exactly. But some people seem to get a lot of emotional release. They get things out of their body that maybe they can't get out of their body in their normal everyday life because they don't feel comfortable. Humans are one of the only, if not the only species of mammal, at least. I think birds do this too, that when they experience a traumatic event, like, for example, if a gazelle is being chased down by like a cheetah or something and it escapes barely, that was still a super traumatic event, right? It had this apex predator running at it as fast as it possibly can. It's running as fast as it possibly can. It's wondering if this is going to be its last moment here on Earth, if it's about to get eaten alive by this massive, ferocious beast, So if it survives that, rather than just like going back to everyday life, like, ooh, that was, you know, that was close. And almost all animals will do this. They have a rhythmic dance that they'll do. They'll shake the trauma out of their body. And like birds that crash into windows will commonly do this. Pretty much every mammal does it. And what they think they're doing is they're actually physically getting the traumatic memory out of their body so that it doesn't take hold. Because if it does take hold, it would set up what we would call PTSD. And so, but humans, for some reason, aren't taught to do this. So when we have a bad experience or something traumatic happens in our childhood or any time, you know, we just like wait and hope it gets better. And sometimes it takes forever. And sometimes those trauma responses stay stuck in the body. And I think this is how we get things like PTSD. So if you look at like music, rhythmic music, metal shows, there's really something therapeutic about fiercely shaking the body, especially to sound. I think that really loud sound helps too.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the sound plates where they put different frequencies with sand on it?
Yes.
And it forms like different shapes?
Yes.
That's got to be happening in the water in our body.
I think it absolutely is.
You know,
to
some type of degree, you know, when you're feeling those, like, especially with like EDM music. I'm not like the biggest, like, I do like EDM music and I've been to a bunch of shows.
Okay.
It's not like my go-to listen to all the time, you know? Yeah. I like a lot of different kind of music.
Sure.
But rock music generally doesn't get as loud as bass music or like as clear, clean, loud.
Okay.
Because you have microphones. The microphones cause feedback and there's a lot of other noises that come in there.
Yeah, that's true. There's kind of a limit on how loud you could go. Right?
Exactly. And without it getting muddier and stuff. But right. I mean, technology still makes it sound fucking great when you see these concerts.
Oh,
but,
and it's so loud still. Yeah.
But the EDM shows and the bass can be way louder.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
So like they've always like, people have complained at Lollapalooza, like in the early years when EDM started becoming a thing, and like Bass Nectar was playing on one stage and Paul McCartney was playing on the other stage, and you could hear a Bass Nectar from fucking across
that
park.
Makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
And you can't hear, you know, they say it's your birthday. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because that bass is gonna travel way farther.
Way farther because they're able to pump it so much louder. Yeah. You know, with less effort.
That's kind of the point, right, of the EDM shows is to feel the bass in your body, right? That's what people say. I haven't actually been to an electronic show before.
But. And sometimes when that shit is, like, vibrating in you, it makes you feel, like high.
Yeah.
You know, your mind, like, goes into, like, a different place. You know, you feel like you're, like, almost meditative in some ways.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I mean,
and
I
another band is, like, Meshuggah.
Yeah.
They kind of have these, like, hypnotic riffs and, you know, their stuff still gets pretty loud and that bass still gets pretty good. And
it's
to, like,
low on those opens.
Yeah, and you just kind of like enter this trance when you're listening to them. And it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to get a little more into Meshuggah. My bandmates are definitely influenced by them for sure. And for some reason, there's so many bands, you know, you can't listen to them all in high school, you know?
Yeah, no, you can't listen to them all in high school. Yeah, honestly, like, I feel like I didn't listen to a lot of music in high school. I was kind of like, I feel, a late bloomer with everything, and I had a lot of resistance.
Really?
In myself, like, opening myself up to, like, new music.
Really?
What
did you start with?
I would say, you know, like, classic rock and stuff like that. Yeah. One of my biggest, like, heavy influences of music that I was into was AC/DC.
Nice.
That was like my first influence, like to get myself like playing guitar.
Yeah.
And then after that was Nirvana.
Ooh, okay.
I just was enticed by Kurt Cobain and just like his whole
story.
A lot
of people were,
His energy behind his songs. You know, I'm not like Jay. Jay's fucking and Leo. They're like incredible musicians, you know. Kurt Cobain wasn't like that.
Right.
You know, but he had another atmosphere around
him.
Yeah,
there's
you know?
Something about him as a person, right, that was maybe he was able to put that into the music somehow.
And I'm not Kurt Cobain, but I definitely felt fit into that mold better than, like, I don't know, like, I just, you know, I'm not a virtuoso, like, musician like that.
Yeah, but I think the goal of a musician is just to make you feel something.
Yeah, exactly.
And the technicality is a tool to sometimes get you there, but it's not a requirement. You know?
Exactly.
And that's what I love about the stuff you guys do is that it's so moody. It's so ambient, and it says so much by saying so little. Like, I, whenever I'm listening to The Waterfall King, almost every track, I'm very quickly like brought to this. It's really not a place I can describe, but what I like about it is that the music always feels like it's holding back. Like, it could say more, but it keeps it, like, it builds this tension up, and I feel it inside, and it's like, ooh. You know, it's like, awesome. I love it, man. I really love it.
I appreciate
all the
that.
Instrumentals, all the vocals, it's all really, really well balanced. It's like it's telling this spooky story that just I get a another little chapter of every time I hear a track. It's really cool.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That means a lot. I forgot where I was going with what. I don't even know what I was saying before.
Yeah, sorry. I might have interrupted you.
No, that's okay.
But I love The Waterfall King, so that's a worthy interruption.
Oh, okay. I was talking about my influence. So Kurt Cobain, Nirvana.
Yes.
And then you're going to have to tell me about a little bit about yourself after this.
I would love to.
And then I would say my next biggest influence was Nine Inch Nails.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Tell me more about that.
I just, like, the sounds that he came up with,
mm-hmm.
and the technology he was using to come up with these sounds isn't like now, you know, there's
yeah.
dubstep music is, like, crazy now.
Sure.
But just, like, the energy that he had, like, my favorite album of all time is probably The Downward Spiral by Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
And it touched me on an emotional level. Like, I definitely connected. Like, Kurt Cobain was kind of vague a lot of the times with what he was saying, or kind of like Bob Dylaning what he was saying, and it wasn't exactly like
Bob Dylaning, like diction wise, like how he was speaking, or
like he would use so many like so much imagery that maybe it didn't like always connect, you know.
Oh, okay.
Like Polly Wants a Cracker, you know, he's talking about like a girl like held in like captivity, but he's like almost like referencing it as like a bird, you know.
Yeah.
And Trent was a little bit, like, deeper, and he was heavier, and he said things a little bit more, like, up front, but also not okay. quite up front. Like, he had like, a poetism about the way that he said things, but his music was just, like, more complex, but it was complex with, like, machine computer stuff.
Yeah, that's
which I understood
that
stuff a lot more than I understand, like, doing what Jay does, you know.
Interesting.
So I was able to take like my music to like another level, and that's mm-hmm. what got me into like doing all like the production stuff and learning mm-hmm. how to do like the synthesizers and even like
yeah.
all this stuff. Even though it's more the tape stuff is analog,
mm-hmm.
it's still derived from that type of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The amount, the types of sounds that I've seen you create on over there are fascinating. That to me is like another language, you know.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool to watch, you know, and just be able to, because as a musician, whenever you see other musicians playing instruments that you play, you definitely can still have an emotional experience, but there's always that part of you that kind of understands what they're doing from a technical perspective.
Right.
So there's a special type of magic when you can experience music and you have no idea how it's made, so you don't waste any energy trying to figure it out, you know?
You're just like, whoa.
You can just really be there in the moment and absorbing it, you know? And I think that's really cool. Because there's been so many concerts I've been to where I'm like, I'm digging it, but I'm like watching. I'm like,
you're
how is he playing this riff?
Bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, I've been working on this at home, but like, is he hitting this fret on this string or this fret on this string? You know what I
right.
mean? I'm like watching him play it as this.
Or is he
going to
do a different live?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to notice. You
right.
know? Whereas if you know if you weren't necessarily a music player, just an experiencer of music, it would be a different experience. You know?
Yeah. I think I still find new things to listen to and to like that come out when I listen to The Downward Spiral, even to this day. I mean, I've listened to that album more than 100 times.
Yeah.
Like countless times.
Sure.
You know, just put it on my headphones and like lay on the floor and like not even do anything else except for listen to this
yeah.
album, you know?
Yes.
And I mean, there's times where just like the sounds and the things that he has going on in there, just like I find new things all the time.
Right.
Where like, how did he get it to that point and then, like, drop
right.
it right there, you know? Just, like, and I still am, like, wowed by it. I still
yeah.
don't understand how he did it. Like, his music that he makes now doesn't even, like, come close to this.
Yeah.
I mean, he still makes pretty good music now, but
mm-hmm.
that album is just, like, so deep for me. And I think a lot of people probably feel that way about that album and him, because he definitely spoke to a very specific group of people, you know, with that album for
what
sure.
What was that group of people?
just really depressed people. Interesting. For sure, I think I would say. I guess I can't speak for everyone else, but
yeah,
his music is pretty. It's kind of depressing in some ways.
Yeah,
it like tells a story about someone like battling with it. You know, that album specifically.
And is it about himself? Did he put his own story into the music?
I think it is. I think it is.
I mean, I suppose you can't. An artist can't ever really create art without putting themselves into it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like. It's pretty heavy. It gets pretty heavy. Like there's one song called like Eraser, and it's like smash me, kill me, erase me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next song is like that Hurt song, which like everyone knows, and that's like how the album ends.
Okay.
And I don't know. I find new things to like connect with it.
Yeah.
Than I do now. You know, it changes how I like. It's one of the only few albums that's like. That I've been able to grow with and find new things to relate to, you know, like, I don't feel the same way I did when I first learned it. I'm a different person
exactly.
now.
Exactly. So you're seeing it through those new eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm seeing it through a new light that I would have never looked at it before.
Yeah.
You know, and still, you know, sometimes you listen to music that you listened to back then, you're like, holy shit, why did I even like that?
Right.
You know, but this has transcended that.
Right. I feel like you really find out what your favorite bands and your favorite albums are more and more as you go through life, because you find out what sticks, you know, find those albums that are always, always medicine when you need them, you know, and you can listen to those. And I think it's really fun to kind of remember younger versions of you listening to that same song and how you felt about it then. And then you can listen to it now and the song is the same, but you're different, but you can somehow connect through time, through the song, to that smaller version of you or just different version of you.
Yeah.
And that's you can learn about yourself. It's almost like it's reflecting some part of you back to you. And the albums that really stick over the years like that, I feel like that's how you learn more about who you are as a person.
Yeah, there's definitely some music where you like reconnect mm-hmm. when you get older, and then there's some music where like you may listen to it and you get like maybe just a nostalgia feeling.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, it's not just a nostalgia feeling. It's like a total reconnection.
Deep. Yeah, dude. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
And it's like, I'll go for like maybe like a year or not even listening to it. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just put it on and it'll just like be a whole new like experience again.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
It is pretty amazing.
Sometimes I forget how important music is, even though it is my life. And I'll get like caught up in life or something, and like I'll start feeling weird. I'm like, something is off right now. I'll kind of take inventory of like what's going on, and I'll realize that I haven't listened to hardly any music in the last week. It's like, how did that happen? You know, like you've just been busy, or like your stereo's out in your car, or like whatever the circumstances are. But like whenever I catch it, and then I will set time aside and just like exactly like you said, just sit, eyes closed, listening to whatever it is I need at that time. And it just changes everything. It's amazing how your perspective on life can shift so radically with just the right sound.
Right.
It's
yeah.
pretty amazing.
It is pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So tell me about your influences.
Well, I started with metal, like early on, like age 5. I was like, the first thing I was really drawn to was probably Megadeth and Iron Maiden. And I happened to have an uncle who knew about Rammstein, like, before everyone else knew about Rammstein. And so I was like, well, this is awesome. Like, you know, just these sounds I'd never heard before.
Hell yeah.
And the more, as I started getting older year by year, I started getting into, like, harder and harder metal. And every time I found a new layer, I was just like, this is the thing, you know? and it's so weird because it happens so naturally. And it never occurred to me that other people would people who aren't into metal are really not into it. They don't understand it. It sounds like anger and chaos to them. Because I get why it could sound that way if you don't have the ear for it. And maybe because I eased into it.
If you start with like Iron Maiden and stuff like that, you know,
I think that's what
they're
it was,
a little bit more
yeah.
digestible than like Meshuggah might be,
right?
Or,
exactly,
you know, some of
exactly.
this heavier stuff.
And it took me probably 10 years to start getting into the heavies like that. Once I found them, though, it was like amazing. But But like anything, it shifts over time. So like, I feel like I have these two parts of me. I have the metal side, and then I have the funk side. That's like my inner child. That's my joy, my happy, my carefree, really in the moment, expansive side. I love that side. Just that, like, just stuck in the groove, like walking through a Laffy Taffy farm type. You know what I'm saying?
I love that.
There's that side. And then my more introspective side, which lately in the last, I would say, few years has been definitely more instrumental, definitely more ambient. So like bands like The Contortionist and Intervals and some of the post-rock bands that Leo and Jay have actually shown me that I had never heard of.
Have you ever heard of Explosions in the Sky?
Heard of them, yeah. I'm not familiar with their stuff, though.
They're like, that's like what you were describing to me made me think that right away. Like, they got really? This, like, their name describes them perfectly.
Yeah, that sounds like something I'd be
it's
into.
It's like this really ambient, like, kind of music, and it's like really beautiful. And then Explosions, like, not like heavy metal, but it's like this really big sound that they like jump into, and it's just like epic sounding.
Yeah, and I it's love like, that.
You know,
I really
just like
love
a big
that.
Explosion, yeah. And
I feel like I experience like heart openings when I listen to music like that.
That is like heart opening music, really.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you really like go with the journey, you know, if you like take the time to listen to where they're coming from and how they get to the point to where it's going to be that explosion makes more sense than just like having it on in the background and then like you hear the explosion and you're like, oh, where did that come from?
Yeah.
You know?
I really don't put on my favorite music in the background. I feel like there's like mid-grade music that you put on in the background,
right.
It's still good, you know what I mean? Not mid-grade, but...
Yeah, you know no, like, EDM is like that. You know, I feel like you can toss most EDM in the background, and you could put some Led Zeppelin or some shit in the background, and most people enjoy it.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, I know what you're saying. It's not... Yeah.
You got to protect the good ones, though. You
got to
keep
them
sacred, because they are sacred, you know? They're, I feel like it's kind of a little ritual every time I listen to these things. It's a healing ceremony of sorts.
Yeah, no, I get that for sure.
But yeah, I really have started vibing a lot more over the last several years with the more instrumental. I guess it's like instrumental, you could say. Like it has those heavier, big, epic parts, but it also tells a little story sometimes that you can't necessarily always tell with words.
Right.
So,
when did you start playing music?
My first instrument was trombone when I was 9. So that was actually, that was fifth grade when I just moved to Illinois.
Where'd you live before?
Washington State.
Okay.
And then
before
that, Arizona. Before that, I was born in California.
Gotcha.
So, but I've lived the longest in Illinois. I went east for a little while, a couple years, and then I've been back for a few years. Since I've come back, like, been some of the best years of my life for sure. Music has brought me to a bunch of cool people. Like, everyone's always trying to get out of Illinois, you know, so I did get out. But like everyone else, I came back. And since I've come back, I have such more of an appreciation for this area. I didn't realize how magical even just the downtown Algonquin and Lake in the Hills area was. You know, there's just so many beautiful little nature spots and little animals and cool kind of metaphysically interesting people. And little secret spots I've found with, there's a spot over, like, down the bike trail. You go off, like, there's a bridge, and you go off the trail. And there's this, like, dugout part of the earth that goes down to the creek. And it looks like it was, like, carved out by, like, a stone giant or something. And there's thousands of these tiny little colorful stones, little, like, red, green, blue. It's a really enchanted spot. And one time I was over there and I found a witch's brew under a tree. There was this little jar that was wax sealed and it had all these herbs and feathers and stuff in it. And there was a note on top saying that it was some type of protection spell that had been put there intentionally by a witch and that your generations would be, or your bloodline would be cursed for generations if you opened this thing. So like that type of like just crazy cool little whimsical stuff.
Hell yeah,
in
that's
this area.
Cool.
It's really neat. There's something special about it.
You should definitely come to downtown Elgin.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's older than Chicago.
Really? That Elgin? Doesn't surprise me. It seems like it's got some old town energy.
Elgin's really fucking old. It's been around for a long time. It used to be the only bridge for a very long time to get across the river. So Elgin used to be bustling back in the day.
Yeah, sure.
And then it went through like a really bad spell. As like when I was a kid, it was horrible. Nobody, I didn't want to be there. But kind of like what you were saying, I never really left Illinois, but I did find a new appreciation, especially for my hometown. I think there's Elgin has done a lot of good things, mm-hmm. and I'm, like, really happy and proud to be a part of that town.
Cool.
Like, to go experience, like, seeing it come from, like, where you're even scared to walk in downtown Elgin, where yeah. it's, like, there's all these great restaurants and all these, like, great record, you know, record shop, a popcorn shop, a
yeah.
smoothie shop, Goose's Juices, like, yeah. just all
Goose's
this
Goose's Juices.
Yeah, that all this cool like stuff. And then we have Lord's Park, and we got, like, these elk, and we have deer.
Dang, really?
There's yeah.
elk and Elgin?
We have elk, deer, Elk-gen? And bison.
Dang,
we have,
that's
I we
cool.
Have, I think we have three buffalo.
Okay, cool. That's dope. Yeah. I didn't know any of that. I don't really go to Elgin that often, and I guess, yeah, my impression of it was always kind of like, it was a little sketchy.
And we'll, one time we'll come out, hang out. We'll go like yeah, hike around man. All the different good spots on Elgin.
Yeah.
Grab some good juice from Dude, Goose's Juices.
Let's hit up the Goose, baby. Yeah. All right, I'm in.
Elgin's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so when did you start playing bass? I didn't mean to.
Oh yeah, sorry. Okay, I started playing trombone when I was 9. I was most drawn to jazz, so that was how that went for a while, and then. I think early high school, I just started dinking around on guitar. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
There was one, like, our family just, like, had an old guitar, and I would, like, play it every once in a while. And then I think, like, sophomore year, I started taking it a little more seriously, like, going online and, like, I would, like, this was, like, my thing is I'd, like, go online, I'd have, like, an AIM window up, you know what I mean? AOL, talking to girls, like, with one half of my mind, and then, like, learning like Avenged Sevenfold riffs on with the other half, you know what I mean? Like going on like Guitar World, looking up tabs or guitar, whatever it was, you know? So I kind of started that way. And the bass is weird though. Bass is a weird one. So I would say, I don't know, shortly after I started playing guitar, I was like I hadn't gotten that far with it, but I was at my friend Jake's house and he had just gotten a bass and he was really into the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which I liked at the time. And but I wasn't like obsessed with them. And he got a bass and he was just barely starting to figure out the slap technique. Like he would just kind of like kind of yeah. But it was just barely, it was like bang, that was it. And I remember seeing it so vividly, seeing him do this, and some weird switch went off in my mind. And I was like, I have to do that. Like I already know how to do it, you know? And so I immediately went out to Guitar Center and just bought a bass. It was like a cheap whatever, Ibanez something. And I learned the style almost immediately. Like it just clicked. And what's interesting is that my dad actually is a bass player and he plays super, super funky bass and has his whole life, like before I was even born potentially. So I might have been exposed to this before I was even born, like when I was in the womb, like being at his band's shows and stuff, because he's been like a musician his whole life. And we have very similar styles and interestingly prefer the same type of basses. And so when I started playing, it was like just almost immediate. There wasn't really a learning curve. Like guitar, I put in so much time into like perfecting my ability as a shredder. You know what I mean? Just, mm-hmm. just thousands of hours of like drilling arpeggios and scales and metronome stuff. Whereas bass is just like, It's so different. It's like this weird flow. It's always been kind of effortless. Not that I haven't put time into it, but my whole approach to it is different. Guitar is a lot more mathematical. Bass is a lot more flowy. And just, it's the vibe, you know?
More organic.
Vibing, baby. Yeah, exactly. So I started playing, I guess that would have been like 10th grade. And, I've been playing both ever since. I've only been in two bands, so my first band
You don't
band
play the trombone
was,
anymore?
No, that was like a 9 year after high school. I really didn't play it. Gotcha. Once I found guitar and bass, it was like it was just that was the thing. I feel like trombone got me there because, interestingly, learning trombone that's where I learned all my music theory from because mm-hmm. I went through school music of that was a class every single day for 9 years. You know, when you're in band, you have band pretty much every day, so you're learning to perform, you're learning the modes, you're learning chord structures. And, you know, notes and tuning and rhythm and all these things. So that was really helpful because when it came time to learn new instruments, I had all the musical understanding before. Not that I was like a musical theory genius by any sense, but after that many years, like, you have a pretty decent understanding. You know?
At least the basics of it, yeah. You know, at the minimum.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it would still, like, for me to, like, read guitar sheet music, I would definitely need a little bit of a refresher, but conceptually... I would fully understand it. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So that was really helpful. But yeah, pretty much it's been mostly guitar and bass ever since. But I've been learning drums lately too, and I really enjoy that.
Nice. You got Leo's drum kit.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've only been in two bands, you were saying?
Yeah, that's it. So my first band was Age of Aries. It was a, I kind of called it groovecore. It was a kind of a mix of groove metal, like really influenced by Lamb of God, Pantera, you know, that kind of like twangy, sludgy, burny awesomeness. With the more technical, hard-hitting metalcore, deathcore influences. I really love the deathcore genre. It's just awesome. Just it's like a beautiful, magical punch in the musical face, you know?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I played guitar in that band, and then now I play bass in Lumiel. So I've kind of got to explore both. But I feel really musically comfortable in Lumiel in the sense that, you know, I was telling you I kind of have that mathematical, shreddy, introspective side, and then I have that kind of joyful, fun, flowy, childy, funky side. And when I'm able, what the music calls for from the bass perspective in the band, I feel like is a perfect medium between those, a perfect kind of hybrid. I can pull from both sides when I need to,
right,
and get groovy when it wants to get groovy, and technical when it wants to get technical, and then just like, you know, I've really been exploring. The cool thing I like about bass is you can sometimes say so much more by saying so little. You know, I really enjoy things.
I know
like
what you're
that.
Saying.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, because I think you started as a bass player too, right?
Kinda. Yeah, like I played guitar and bass. I've been bass in a band before. When I was in the River Gypsies, I played bass.
Mm.
But I've only been in a few bands myself either.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a band in high school that I started. And I wrote like maybe four or five songs.
Nice.
And then I had, everybody was like a girl in the band. There was a girl keyboard player, a girl
really?
Drummer, and a girl singer. And then it was just me playing guitar.
Nice.
And then like I had wrote the songs like with a little bit of help with the singer.
Okay.
Because she didn't really play any instruments, but she helped me with like the lyrics and like definitely coming up with the melody lines because I couldn't do the melodies.
Okay.
And I recorded that stuff all on a reel to reel.
Okay. I don't even know what that is.
It's like, kind of like imagine a cassette, but mm-hmm. really big.
Okay.
It's like really big, and you can put multiple tracks on there, but mine was only two tracks.
Okay.
So you had like a left and right channel.
Whoa.
And then, yeah.
So this is like a pretty, I don't know what the word is, the opposite of digital, like this.
Yeah, it's
this
like super analog.
Analog,
but it's,
yeah.
But it's like, go. It's like a more, it was a consumer version of a professional like tape recording thing they okay. would do in the back in the day.
Interesting.
But it was like a consumer version. It was like a Sony, like, you know, it was okay. like it was like this big, pretty thick.
Yeah.
Had the two big. I'm gonna pull up a picture of it. So yeah, you know exactly please. What I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm always interested in these analog things because they seem like there's a crispness to the sound of them. That's why people are still interested, right? In the vinyl and the cassettes and stuff. It's
yeah, the crispness and
oh, that's
the warmth.
Dope.
So that's like kind of what it looked
that's,
like.
You recorded on something like that?
Yeah.
Dang, that's cool.
Kind of looked like that.
Okay.
The Akai. It was.
The
it
name
was
is cool.
Pretty sure it was a Sony, the one that I had. But it was like that.
That's cool. That looks like a time machine.
It is kind of like a time machine, yeah.
Wow.
So I recorded us on that. And then I was in a band called the Leaf Lords.
I love that name.
And we were only a band for like a little. It was only, that band was only a band for like maybe like 6 or 7 months.
Okay.
Leaf Lord was a band maybe for like under a year.
Okay.
Then I wasn't in a band for like quite a while after that, until this band Groove Canal.
Mm.
And that was like a funk jam band.
Nice.
And I just kind of like got randomly asked to play open mic, because the guy who was like the band leader, everyone quit. So he needed people to play.
Mm.
And I had played with this guy before, so we kind of, like, you know, knew what we were looking for.
Sure.
Just do it. And then I was in this Metallica Black Sabbath band, cover band, Paranoid Justice.
Ooh.
And then
I love the names of cover bands. That's, yeah. like, part of the art of the cover band.
It's right,
perfect
exactly.
Perfect cover band name.
Yeah.
That's
and
a
then
good
that's
one.
You know, Paranoid Justice, it makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was in the River Gypsies.
Okay.
That was kind of like in between and after. Like it happened kind of at the same time, like a crossover.
Okay.
And then And then I quit that band, and then I was in the River Gypsies and Seeds of Apollo, which was the singer of River Gypsies, and me did, like, kind of my Nine Inch Nails take on things.
Nice, okay.
And I could show you some of that stuff later.
Yeah.
And then when he passed away, like, I stopped playing music for a while.
Okay.
And I made music. I've been making music by myself, like, this whole time, you know?
Okay.
And now I'm in the Waterfall Gang.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's interesting because I actually tried out to be in Lumiel to be the bass player.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then...
And what happened? It just didn't... It wasn't the... I guess it wasn't meant to be, right?
Yeah, I mean, Leo was like, yeah, man, like, he was super down to have me play.
Yeah.
And then some other guy came and, like, tried out and they ended up wanting to have this guy.
Okay.
And then that guy wasn't you. It was, like, some other person. And so he had some issues and he had to leave. You know, I don't think it was any animosity between anybody, but he had other things going on where he couldn't be in the band anymore.
Okay.
And then he would talk to me about being in the band again,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, you came along, and then, like...
Oh, dang.
But, yeah, you know, I was all glad...
I'm glad everything happened the way it did, because luckily we have Lumiel and the Waterfall King, which is a dope combination.
Yeah, dude, I want to do some of the stuff with you guys.
Yeah, same. We talk about that all the time. Like, we feel really, really blessed to know you guys. I feel like we're going to do things.
Take over the world.
Yeah,
take over Illinois.
Yeah. Oh, beyond that, for sure. Because I feel like we have, although our music is, you know, obviously is not the same, we have similar intentions. And I haven't really talked to you guys all about this, but I feel it from the music that there's an intention to catalyze some type of spiritual change, like deep in the souls of the people listening to it, you know?
Yeah,
I feel that every time I listen to your guys' music, regardless of, like, what the setting is, you know, like, once, like, Morin's vocals come in, I'm just like, oh, man.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's a magical human being.
He is magical. I'm really glad that I've been able to find him. I've said this on the podcast a bunch of times, so I hope he hears at least one of them.
I'm sure he will.
But I don't know, it's really nice to be able to find someone that, like, you can, like, trust, you know, to play music with, because you have to really allow yourself to be vulnerable.
Yeah, it's true. It's, you know, like a romantic relationship. It's kind of sillily similar to a romantic relationship in terms of, like, people you played with before. It's kind of like an ex, you know,
right.
You see them, it's always a little weird. And they're like, oh, so you're in a band now. And you're like, yeah. And they're like, how's that? And you're like,
I'm playing bass now. Oh, you're not playing guitar anymore?
Right, exactly. Or you go hang out with your old bandmates, and it's like, oh, you know, your current bandmates are like, so how was that? You know, did you guys jam? Or
are you guys,
like,
going to jam again?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, yeah, we jammed. You're like, did you play,
like,
some
it?
Of your... Yeah, how was... Did you play your old songs? Or yeah, it's...
Did they remember them?
Right, exactly. Did you remember them?
Yeah, did you remember them?
Right. It's pretty silly, but it really is that way. It's like, it doesn't have to be, but,
just because we get so vulnerable. Like,
you spend so much time being, like, opening the portals of your soul together, you know, that you really don't find that in any other type of relationship in that quite that same way, you know, other than maybe an intimate romantic relationship.
Yeah.
That's really the closest thing.
And you have to allow someone else to kind of, like, dictate a little bit sometimes, you know, like, nope, this is what I think it should be,
right?
And you have to either be okay with it or communicate with them how we can change it and all be on the same page.
Exactly.
You know, and or you have to sometimes just let go of that,
right,
yourself, and be like, okay, well, maybe I'm, like I said before, you have to trust the other person that, okay, maybe what they want is right. Maybe I don't feel as confident or as sure as what I want is good. And I would hope that they're going to reciprocate the feeling in a situation where I'm feeling that way, where I'm like, I think it needs to be like this.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll be like, okay, let's do that.
Yeah. Because it's interesting because you can all kind of see each other's parts from the outside perspective. And a person might be playing the perfect part, but they're like, oh, no, it's not good enough. I could play better than this. It's like, maybe you could play something more technical, but is it really... Is it serving the song in the best way? You know, I feel like the song itself is almost alive, and the musician's job is to kind of find it. That's kind of how I've always looked at it, is like, I like to use the analogy that you're like walking in the desert and you like trip on a bone or something, and you trip on a rock and you're like, what is this thing? And you know, when you look and you're like, wait a minute, I think this is like a bone or a fossil or something. So you like brush a little bit of away and you're like, it is. So you start brushing more away, and then you're starting, and this is as the song is starting to come, you're coming together. You're like, okay, I kind of see where it's going. It's this feel. You brush some more away. It's like, I see it involves these chords. You brush some more away. Oh, here's this other part with this, you know, the rhythm changes here and whatever. You're cleaning off this skeleton to show this beautiful, fossilized ancient beast skeleton that is the song, you know,
right.
And it's the job of everyone to kind of collaborate and do their part to find those pieces. But you know,
in make sure we're identifying that, the same piece of the,
yeah, exactly. And that you're not projecting your own, ego over what the song actually is. You know, it's like, oh, you might think this is the right part, but you're like, is it the right part? Or do I just really like playing this part because it, like, shows off my ability to do this, or allows me to play in this new technique that I've just really been wanting to implement because it's cool, you know, but it might not be the right time.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a fun journey.
It is a fun journey.
And the more you can get out of your own way, the better it is.
There's a book you should read if you haven't already, called Zen Guitar.
I have not.
I'm going to just show it to you so you can
please
see. Because you read pretty frequently, right?
Yeah.
So... I kind of looks. This is the one that I have. It looks like that.
Ooh, I like that cover the best.
And it's just like a philosophical way to. I mean, honestly, the guitar can be replaced with any art form.
Sure.
You know, they just focus on the guitar.
Yeah.
You know, marketing or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it really, really is pretty interesting and facilitates a lot of like what we were just talking about. What it takes to be in a band with someone.
Yeah.
You know, you need to kind of let go of some things, and some things you need to step on and step up with, and you need to be around people who are willing to allow you to step up when the time comes and not push you down.
Right.
And you need to do the same when the time comes for the other people that
exactly.
are in your circle, you
right.
know?
And call them out when you think they could be playing something that's even better.
Right.
It's
exactly.
hard to tell someone though, you know?
And it's hard to receive that.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And that's where the vulnerability comes with being with people and doing that. And it's, and when you finally get through all of that and you go on stage and play in front of people and everyone is like digging it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
makes
like
it all worth
makes
it.
Makes it all worth it.
Yeah. What an honor, right?
You guys can look at each other and just be like,
yeah. To just know when you're in those moments where you're playing these musics that you've put so much time and effort into, and no one's told you to do it. You've just done it because your heart couldn't say no. And you finally get to that point where you're able to channel these melodies that didn't even come from you. Like, you put in the effort of kind of shaping them and finding them, but they're coming from someplace higher, wherever that is, the creation plane, you know. And people are really vibing with it. There's something happening inside of them. Who knows what it is? Who knows what experience they're going through, what emotions they're feeling, what memories are being drawn up? You know, maybe they're laughing, crying, dancing, moshing, sleeping. Who knows? But they're having an experience that they wouldn't be having if they weren't right there at that time.
Right.
And what an honor to be able to bring that to people.
Yeah. And, yeah, it is. It really is.
I love it.
I love it too. Well, I think we're probably going to wrap it up here.
Sweet.
But before we go, I have to ask.
Okay.
What is your hair routine?
Well, I'm glad that you asked. So lately, one of the most important things is not cutting it. I, in recent years, have gotten onto this idea that hair is an extension of the nervous system. And that it actually is able to draw information in from your environment and in ways that we could call psychic or extrasensory. So one very important thing to me that kind of drives my whole routine is thinking of it as a sensory apparatus and a way of accessing higher realms of subtle energies. So that's the paradigm. What I actually do is I have what is it made of? I think it's bamboo. I have a bamboo brush that I use. I find plastic to be kind of staticky, and I try to minimize the amount of static that's near my brain and body, just for health reasons, you know. So yeah, I use really clean, natural shampoos, and try to get a lot of sun, and consume a lot of minerals. Yeah, how about you?
Not much. None of that.
Really?
Yeah. But I don't, I've recently have cut my hair. It's a little bit more stylized, and I've done it in a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
But usually I just do nothing.
Do you notice a change when you have trimmed it at all? Have you ever gone from, like, long like it is now to very short?
Yes.
And what did you notice?
It feels kind of good.
Really?
Yeah.
In what way?
It feels light and refreshing, and, like, you can run your fingers through your hair. And
really?
It's nice. But also, it feels good to have long hair, too.
Right. And why is that?
I don't know.
See, this is, I think there's something to this. There, and it was either World War One or World War Two. The United States conscripted Native Americans, Native American trackers specifically, to be used to find the enemy in war, because they were really, really able to find animals and game trails in the wild. They had, like, superhuman abilities to read nature in ways that other people couldn't. And once they joined the military, because they were going to use them to find, you know, enemy bases and stuff, they made them cut their hair to get a military haircut like the other soldiers, because that was routine. And they lost all of their abilities. And they told them this would happen. They're like, we need this. This is part of our bodies. And they're like, well, no, you got to cut your hair. This is the military, you know. And they couldn't do it anymore. So there's very, and there's, in from a modern perspective, there are things called Corellian photography, where they can take a picture of you and it measures essentially what you could call your aura, but from a more science-y perspective, I suppose you could say. And there's a seeable field coming off of your hair, especially if you have longer hair. So the I believe it was the Taoists or some ancient mystic group say that after 3 years, your hair will get to a point where the ends become like tiny little antennas. And they're able to pick up that extrasensory information from your environment. So I'm at like a year and a half, I think, right now. So I'm interested to see if I get there, what happens. But there's, you know, it's a commitment.
I think I definitely went more than 3 years not cutting my hair.
Really?
I think so.
And what started to happen?
Just got really long, and I don't take care of it.
It just got really long.
I don't take care of it, so I had a lot of split ends too. So,
but see, those split ends might be the little antennas forming. I'm not sure.
Could be.
I don't know. I don't think I have any split ends. To be honest with you, I don't know.
No, your hair looks amazing. That's why I asked.
Oh, okay. I thought that was like a question you ask everybody.
No, it's not. It's a specific Devin question.
There, one other thing that I do too is I'm pretty careful about what water I'm using on my hair. So I have a filter that filters out a lot of the chlorine out of my shower head, and then I use a slightly acidic 5.5 pH electrolyzed alkaline water. Well, I guess it's not alkaline because it's slightly acidic, but I use an alkalizer machine and has a specific pH setting that matches the same acidity levels as your skin and hair, and I'll sometimes use that almost like as like a conditioner, and I find that when I do, my hair is extra soft and nice. So that could be an aspect of it, too. Some of these things are so routine, you know, you kind of forget that you do them.
Yeah. Well, you guys need good hair. Yeah. Listen up.
It's necessary. All right,
well, I appreciate you coming out, man.
Yeah, man.
This was super awesome.
This was awesome.
This was a really good one.
I love the new studio, too. I would love to come back here again sometime.
Love getting to know you better.
Yeah, man. This was like the longest you and I have ever, like, chilled together.
Yeah, chilled and talking.
Yeah, man.
How long have we been going for?
I don't know. I have no concept of time.
We're coming up on, like, almost an hour 40.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang. All right. Sweet. Yeah. Good. This is a good episode.
If it wasn't a weekday, I would say, like, I could go longer.
Yeah.
But
we'll round two super soon. I'm down.
All right. Well, tape when we're out of here.
See ya.